Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, what Putin wanted and what he got at his summit with President Trump. But first, to the political junkie. Good morning, Ken Rudin. How are you?
Good morning, Carrie. He got everything he wanted. He did.
Hey, by the way, I have to say that I saw the button of the day tweeted. Oh,
well,
you are devilish, aren't you?
Well,
that's not a real button, is it?
It's a real button. It's not. Of course, it's a caricature, but it's a real button. It was put out. Yeah. I don't make them. I just show America, and they can decide. America can decide.
Yes, yes. Okay, I'll retweet your tweet of the button. It was quite. Should we describe? No, we'll leave that. We'll leave that to curious Twitter listeners. Okay, what do you mean when you say Putin got everything he wanted? Like what?
Well, he got dissension in the NATO alliance. He got the president attacking European allies. He called the European Union a foe. And here we have the Putin who is kicked out of the G7, who is roundly dismissed by the world for his invasion of Ukraine in 2014, the meddling in the U.S. election, and only last Friday, as we just heard on the newscast, the response to what happened with the Department of Justice with the indictment of 12 Russian intelligence officers for what they did in the U.S. interference election in 2016. And here he is being welcomed by an American president who says that we could be good friends. And he didn't say that about Germany. He didn't say that about Britain. He certainly didn't say that about Trudeau of Canada in the aftermath of G7. But with Vladimir Putin, from day one, Donald Trump has said, this guy could be a friend, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we are friends with this country.
It does feel a little bit like upside down land, doesn't it? Canada, Germany, get away from me. Putin, you're such a charming man. Where have you been all my life? It's bizarre.
Now, I hear a smile in your voice,
yes.
And I hear, yes, upside down. But I also at the same time read Charles Blow in the New York Times this morning, who said Trump is a traitor and may well be treasonous. That's beyond just funny stuff. I mean, that's strong stuff, and I'm only repeating it because there is a feeling out there that whatever Donald Trump is doing with U.S. relations with so-called allies, with NATO, with the G7, all that he is fomenting divisions within those alliances, and that exactly is what the Putin playbook is all about.
I listened to the impromptu press conference that the president held after the NATO summit. And there were a number of different statements, Ken, but this is the one that I think had not been planned. And then he started to take questions. And it was, I mean, it sounded really remarkably off the cuff. And he seemed to be riffing on whether NATO had committed to 2% or 4%. I mean, it was hard to understand whether anything substantial actually got done at that meeting, except that the European leaders were able to reel him back in on his, the United States doesn't need to be in NATO anyway. I mean, there was no forward motion, I guess, was my assumption. What'd you see?
I think what maybe Trump got out of it is the fact that just with President Obama, the United States has been urging its allies, NATO allies, for years to increase the percentage of what each country spends on its own defense. Obama pressured the NATO allies for years on that, got nowhere. Trump basically is taking credit for the agreement, the understanding that yes, these allies are increasing spending, and it's now become an issue that they're concerned about. So Trump, as with everything is a self-congratulatory press conference by him, and he certainly congratulated himself for the focus on defending, for these countries defending themselves.
We're
spending more money on their own defense.
The me and only me, right?
Oh, yeah, yes, it's the opera. He's the opera singer, the me, 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 me. I mean, that's exactly what he does, and he does it sometimes very effectively.
Will tweets here, what was the purpose of this meeting? Now back to Trump and Putin. Considering Russian defense officials were indicted on Friday for hacking into U.S. computers and interfering with the election that put Donald Trump into office, one wonders what was so important about this meeting that Donald Trump felt he could not cancel. I want to ask something that Will's raising there, Ken, which is, Do you think the president has members of his closest circle of advisors who were disagreeing with him, and he went ahead with the meeting anyway, but that he has people on his team who can say to him, here's the reason why you shouldn't do it, and be assured that he's giving some serious consideration to that?
The only people I've heard say don't do it are Democrats. And of course, the president does not listen to Democrats. You do know that the National Security Advisor, John Bolton, the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, are very skeptical of Putin's intentions. John Bolton has always been known as a hardliner when it comes to Putin and Russian expansionism. But are they going to Trump and saying, don't do this, or beyond the warning? Well, look, Trump is, as we've always said, he's his own Secretary of State. He's his own National Security Advisor. He knows more. Look, by playing golf for 2 days prior to the meeting with Putin, instead of sitting down and getting involved in details and what to prepare, you know that the president is very confident of his own abilities. He was confident as his businessman. He was confident as a candidate. And he's confident now as president, even though Putin, by all accounts, should be able to outsmart him, and given the fact that he's a former KGB operative, for goodness sakes.
I have to read you this from Amy Walter, who I think is still with the Cook Political Report, right?
She is.
Really,
yes.
Smart on politics. She says, my neck is still sore from whiplash and watching Republicans who attacked Obama as leading from behind and not being tough enough on our enemies now bend over backward to rationalize Russian election interference as no big deal. Is this just really all about the person, the cult of personality around Donald Trump and policy? We can't expect any continuity on policy anyway.
Well, look, I'm surprised Amy Walter would even bother writing about that, because we've been saying that, and we've all been saying, I'm not criticizing Amy, of course, but we've all been saying that forever, that the acquiescence of the Republicans in Congress on all things Trump is just remarkable. And, of course, if you don't go all the way, you become like Mark Sanford or Jeff Flake. You become outcast and lose your own primaries and your political career is over. But when I saw that the berating of the FBI agent last week in that hearing, the House Intelligence Committee hearing, and the saying that, the guy saying, Louie Gohmert, the Republican from Texas, saying, how do you look at your wife and the fact that you lie to her? And this is a party that supports the president in all his lies, to all his wives, let alone to the rest of the country. It's just remarkable what they see and what they don't see.
Ken Rudin with us, the political junkie, as he usually is on Mondays. If you have a question for Ken about President Trump in Europe meeting Vladimir Putin, about Democrat strategy for the midterm, some interesting reading over the weekend on that, 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828. You can also tweet in a question at Carrie NPR. Some interesting analysis, Ken, that I've been reading about how populism is changing the United States and how it's changing Europe. And I was reading this piece by Roger Cohen in an op-ed in the Times about it. He wrote, worse, populism, it's freighted with contempt applied to all voters who have decided that mainstream political parties have done nothing for their static incomes or disappearing jobs or sense of national decline these past two decades. Populism is a dismissive term for everything metropolitan elites can't quite find the energy to understand. I think you might be one of those metro elites, Ken, that he's talking about. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's one of those words like nationalism, like nativism, that certainly has given a whole new meaning to what it is. Look, there's obviously a rejection, an antipathy towards to the status quo, the way that things had been working, and Donald Trump, as we've seen in Europe as well, there's this outgrowth of new nationalism and anti-elitism that seems to be taking over. And also accompanying that is this new move towards authoritarianism, whether it's about a dismissal, about the media. We saw Donald Trump in Europe talking about, once again, the media is the enemy of the people, and corrupt media, and CNN is fake news, and NBC is fake news. And the more you say it over and over and over again, it could only lead to more and more people saying, well, maybe the media is fake, or maybe it is not reporting the truth. And when people, more and more people start to say, well, maybe the media is not our bulwark against authoritarianism, we all lose. And that seems to be the Trump playbook.
And Vladimir Putin says, mission accomplished. Well done.
Exactly.
On to the next disruption, right?
I mean, exactly right. And even if this does not prove collusion, I mean, I don't know what Robert Mueller is seeing in all this, especially with the indictment on Friday. And maybe, look, clearly, in my mind, Russia clearly had a choice, a favorite in the 2016 election. Did Trump work with the Russians? I mean, that's for Robert Mueller to sort out. But even if he didn't, it was clear what Russia was trying to do, and it seems clear that Trump benefited from it and is still trying to repay the favor in a summit or a meeting like you're seeing today.
Ken, I wonder what you think about what happened in California over the weekend with Dianne Feinstein and the party. I mean, it looks like she's still in a really strong position to come out of that Democratic primary, but the party endorsing somebody else. What's that in the background, Ken?
I think it's a phone that shouldn't be on, and it is off, but it's still talking. And I think I'm throwing it across the room.
All right.
And breaking some furniture in the process.
Good. You do that. Yeah.
But anyway, but it is pretty remarkable. It just shows that within the Democratic Party, there's a very strong liberalism, progressive, left-wingism, whatever you want to call it, supporting Kevin DeLeon against Dianne Feinstein. And what's interesting about the endorsement of DeLeon is that Feinstein has really done what she said. She has moved towards the left in recent years. She has no longer talking about, I want to work with President Trump. I'm no longer a supporter of capital punishment. I'm more in tune with the angry Democratic electorate. But that still didn't satisfy the California Democrats who endorsed DeLeon by 65% of the vote. But
wow,
all polls show that Feinstein has a huge lead. By the way, there is no Republican in this race for the second Senate race in a row in California. The Republicans don't even have a candidate. It's between Dianne Feinstein and somebody even further to the left. So it shows the Democratic Party is angry. We saw that with the Joe Crowley upset by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York a few weeks ago. But whether it plays nationally, look, whether Feinstein wins or DeLeon wins, it's still, a big win for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. But you can see the anger is still there.
Back to Russia here, Ken, and a call from Astrid in St. Paul. Hi, Astrid.
Hi. I'll try and make this concise.
Okay.
I was wondering, Ken, I have a lot of respect for Masha Giffen and her opinion on Trump and his relations with Putin. What I'm wondering is, what are your thoughts on the fact that Trump is alienating the United States from our allies, and then he's embracing people like Kim Jong-un and, of course, Putin? But according to Masha Giffen, actually, Putin and the Russians think he's a big buffoon. So it seems like he's alienating us from everyone, because the people he's embracing really don't think anything of him. And then the allies who, we need, regardless, he's already alienated them.
Okay.
So we're kind of like
Astrid, I think we've got the essence of that. What do you think, Ken?
I mean, this is the most disheartening thing of the most, other than having a phone call go off in the middle of my conversation with you, Kerry. I think the most disheartening thing of everything is just watching the reaction to what Trump is doing, and the reaction not only among our allies, where the regard for the U.S. and certainly the regard for Trump is just at rock bottom, but if you looked at a poll in Russia, they despise him in Russia too. So it's not that he's gaining favor with anyone. It's just that what he's doing is he's sowing, as I said, the distrust and the disillusionment between the U.S. and its allies. And who benefits? I mean, we don't benefit when you talk about these trade deals that are hurting this country and destroying the country. The president will attack the Allies, the Mexico, the European Union, while praising the Russians of the world. And again, we goes back to the earlier conversation, why the Republicans, members of Congress, the Republicans elite, other than the few people like, you know, Steve Schmidt or George Will, why they go along with it and what they think they can gain from it.
It's a good question. We'll ask Molly McHugh and Chris Preble about that on the other side of news as we talk about this summit that has just finished. I think President Trump and Putin getting ready to make some statements, and we'll bring you any news out of those statements as well. Ken, thanks. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks. I'll go get that phone now. Thanks.
You do that. And I will retweet Ken's funny little button of the day.